WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. This is Jason Mann, and with me today is Kay Sawyer Paul of Aggressive Art, one of my FairToFlare colleagues. How you doing, KSP?
Man, this was tough. This is a tough assignment.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you why. The match we're talking about today, sorry to steal your intro thunder, but the match we're talking about today from SummerSlam 2004 is not only... I think the only time that I've ever seen Chris Benoit wrestle live in a major capacity. I was there for WrestleMania 18, and he wasn't at WrestleMania 18.
Yeah, he was hurt then. Yeah,
he was hurt then. You're right. Yeah, it's possible that this is the only time I've ever been live to see Chris Benoit wrestle. And watching this match earlier today in preparation for this show. The first time I've seen a Chris Benoit match in 4 years.
Yeah.
So this one's difficult for me because I've gone out of my way to avoid him.
So how did you feel about watching it for the first time?
Well, it's tough because I am one of the largest advocates for professional wrestling to be considered as an art form. And for that reason, I actually have a lot of reasons to talk about Chris Benoit because, like real artists, the work you do can sometimes destroy you. And this is something that, is harder to explain than it should be. But just based on the content and the idea that your own health, your own mental well-being is less important to you than your work is unfortunately a very artistic attitude. Mm-hmm. Whether you think that's good or bad, it is something that has been prevalent in art for centuries. Right?
Yeah.
And so it's tough for me to talk about Benoit because he was so goddamn excellent. Mm-hmm. But it's impossible now to watch Chris Benoit's work without having what he did painted onto everything he did in the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, it's impossible to watch him do a flying headbutt. Or to wrench a guy's neck, or to just apply a simple headlock without painting him as a murderer.
Mm-hmm. You know, one part of this match that really stood out to me, and a lot of it because it was an incredible move, was sort of midway through. Benoit hits sort of a modified DDT onto the apron after he and Orton have been battling there. And then Benoit follows it up with hits a baseball slide, sending Orton sort of against the barricade. And then he runs at full speed and then launches a tope through the ropes that completely misses Orton. He lands face first into the wall at full speed and then falls backward and the back of his head hits the apron. And then JR's already sort of talking about the damage that the move could take, referring more to Benoit's previous neck injuries. But I'm just thinking they're like, wow, it's stuff like that, you know, probably did not help Benoit or probably hurt Benoit's mental condition significantly. you know, just stuff like that. You just of, you know, incredible, crazy, you know, risks and, you know, crazy bumps to your head and your neck and, you know, that, you know, and obviously I don't know whether that caused damage or whatever, but, you know, given what we know of the brain damage that Benoit suffered, it's, you know, impossible to believe that stuff like that didn't have a major part in it.
I always go back to Bret Hart's idea of what wrestling should be. Mm-hmm. Wrestling should look like it hurts, right? Wrestling should look rough and intense and tight, mm-hmm. but it should never actually hurt.
Yeah.
And I always feel like Chris Benoit listened to the first part of that, but very often didn't particularly take heed to the second part. Especially in this match, every single move looks horrific in this match. Mm-hmm. Like, even the moves that Orton does to Benoit look painful. Mm-hmm. Like, this, like, I'm actually, one of the things I want to say is how impressed I was by Randy Orton in this match. Right?
Me too, actually.
At the time, Randy Orton was not considered to be a good wrestler. Even today, there are many people who don't consider Orton to be that great a wrestler. And those people certainly didn't consider him to be good at this point. Mm-hmm. Right? The people who do consider Orton to be quality understand that for the first few years, he wasn't that good. Mm-hmm. And he coasted a lot on name brand recognition, charisma, and his allegiances.
Right.
Right. His actual in-ring work was not that impressive at the beginning of his career. But in this match, Orton does things that I don't know that I've ever seen him do in other matches. Like the gut-wrench backbreaker that he does.
Yeah.
Just looks so, so painful.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know Orton was that strong.
Yeah. He actually hit that again. He hit that recently in a match against Christian, which I, the match I saw was last month. And I was like, wow, I've never seen him do that before. And then he did it in this match. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess he has done it. But yeah, it's something, nothing that I've ever seen him pull out, you know, other than those two times maybe he had. And yeah, he had to be incredibly strong. I mean, obviously he's still a strong guy, but he was definitely, you know, 20 pounds more muscle at this point in his career. And yeah, the way he was able to lift Benoit up into that was pretty impressive. And also, yeah, it looked very painful.
Yeah. I don't like every headlock in this match looked rough.
Yeah.
You don't get matches like this on WWE pay-per-views very often. Mm-hmm. It's weird. This match sort of felt like a WCW match in a sense.
Okay.
Like, and only because it felt less choreographed.
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever agents who worked on this match made it just didn't come across like a WWE match to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was so tight, because it wasn't cartoony, because when one of them fell, they didn't bounce, they just fell.
Yeah.
Right?
It's
the kind of thing that, like, you remember in Jericho's second book, he got criticized for doing that. He got criticized for wrestling matches like this when he first came to WWE,
mm-hmm.
because he wouldn't bounce around like a cartoon character, which is very indicative of WWE style.
Right.
But they do not do that in this match at all. They just fall. They just look hurt. They just crouch. They just crumble.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting how tentative the match was for the first few minutes. Like, they're really slow to lock up, the mat work, there's a lot of,
those were weird, right? Those immediate lockups at the beginning of the match,
yeah.
they try to do a lockup three times.
Yeah.
And they don't, it's not like they don't get it done, is that they both break.
Yeah.
Really crisply.
Yeah, it's like they're definitely feeling, it's definitely a long, extended feeling each other out kind of thing, which is, it's interesting because of where Orton's character was at this point, because they sort of were pushing him as a top bad guy in the top bad guy group with Triple H, with, you know, Flair as sort of the manager of the group, as Batista as the muscle of the group, but not really a star yet. But, and he, of course, Orton in 04, he had a really good series with Mick Foley and had a pretty good series with Edge, was the Intercontinental Champion. But clearly there was a segment of the fan base that was getting behind him. Which is sort of interesting in hindsight because of how that didn't really work out. But at this time, I mean, Orton was definitely a hot character. And I'm surprised, because this was in Toronto, I'm surprised that Benoit didn't really get an overwhelming reaction when he came out or really during the match.
So this is where me being there live and me being a Torontonian can help give some context to this.
Okay.
Lawler brings it up at some point in time in the match that that the crowd is being kind of weird. Toronto crowds are notoriously unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're passionate wrestling fans, you'll very rarely get a quiet Toronto crowd.
Mm-hmm.
But we often like to A, cheer the bad guys, B, evangelistically cheer Canadians,
mm-hmm.
and C, boo the shit out of Earl Hebner.
Yes.
And it's very rare that all three of those things come into play in one match. But what we've got here is Randy Orton, who was still being billed as a bad guy. Yeah, right? Like, you're absolutely right. There were fans he was gaining a following.
Yeah.
But in character, he was still a villain.
Yeah, he was there were signs he was transitioning, though, at this point. I mean,
certainly.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like he was becoming a good guy, but it certainly wasn't complete by any stretch. But
certainly, and you can very easily say that this is the match where Randy Orton became a good guy.
Right.
He comes in as a cocky villain, and he leaves a sort of appreciative, humble character.
Yes.
Like, just amazed that he got through the experience and a changed man.
Mm-hmm.
But the crowd latches onto Orton as a villain and cheers him because it's Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Benoit comes out, they cheer him because he's Canadian.
Yeah. Do you think there was
comes
any
out and you, sorry?
I was just gonna say, do you think there's any sense that Benoit was sort of like, okay, we've seen Benoit now, like he's been champion 5 months, we feel like we'd rather move on, kind of thing? Or
I definitely got the feeling in the crowd that they were there because they knew there would be a title change.
Okay,
right? Like 2 weeks before this match, Orton wasn't even the number one contender. Like he became the number one contender two Raws before the show.
Yeah.
So it was sort of a rushed story. Like, right. It didn't really have a lot of buildup.
Mm-hmm.
But there was definitely a sense in the crowd that this is something that was going to happen.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like just another Benoit pay-per-view as the last four had been.
Right.
And I don't know how much evidence was backing that idea, but that idea was definitely there.
Yeah.
The complete lack of interference also helped that, I think. I think if there was interference, Benoit would have kept it for some reason, even though Orton was the bad guy and he had more friends than Benoit. I feel like it being a straight match led to that eventuality.
Okay.
But the important thing here is Hebner. Hebner was the referee. So the first three or four chants of the match are the "You Screwed Brett" chants.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed at your compatriots for that one. Of course,
I apologize, but it was 04, right? 04 is not 08 or 09. Like,
well, it was still 7 years later. But yeah. I will agree. But first of all, WWE did a lot to foment that. So yeah. So it wasn't like it was just the crowd doing it on their own. I mean, they were goaded a lot into that. So,
yeah. So, I mean, in a sense, we were playing the part that they wanted us to play. But Torontonian fans in general do like to sort of fuck with what we should be as a crowd. And I don't know why. I don't know where that came from. I don't know how that got started, but that's certainly the case. So that's why the crowd is weird, because they don't really know what to do. They want to cheer Orton, but they also need to cheer Benoit. So the only person that gets booed is the referee.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. That which, you know, I guess when in doubt, boo the referee.
Why not?
Yeah. Another weird thing for me is Lawler, and it's Ross and Lawler on commentary, and Lawler being very blatantly, openly cheering for Orton. Like,
Lawler was always Evolution's cheerleader that whole year.
Right, but that's the weird thing for me, because I, in like my memory of it, I remember Lawler, the bad guy, like in the mid-90s with Vince being the commentary, but I always kind of think, like, once, like, 98, 99 happened, like, I in my head, I think Lawler was basically always sort of like a sarcastic but yet fan favorite, you know, commentator. I kind of forget about that mid-2000s period where he started rooting for the bad guys randomly again, you know?
Well, and it wasn't – I guess it seemed random, but it was consistent. He was Evolution's cheerleader from the outset of the group to the end.
Well, yeah. I mean, it felt like I'd forgotten that completely, the direction of Lawler's character. That whole period I was sort of, you know, like,
You do get a sort of schizophrenia, as you do as a wrestling historian, jumping around and always hearing Lawler on commentary, but Lawler is a different character throughout certain eras.
Yes, exactly. So he's definitely more smarmy and, you know, and kind of, you know, kiss-assy here, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so...
does that high pitch. I'm glad he doesn't do that high pitch anymore.
Yeah.
But that used to annoy me to no end, the high pitch.
Yes. Yeah. A lot of cool sequences in this match. One pretty early where, Orton sort of punching out of a headlock, and then he gets a little bit cocky, and then Benoit kind of goes straight back to the arm. Benoit's kind of working the arm. Then later, Orton does an Irish whip, and he tries to do the drop kick, but then Benoit holds the ropes. I always enjoy the holding the ropes on an Irish whip kind of thing, and the bad guy missing the move. It's always a fun thing.
I always notice that. They always do, if they're going to hit a drop kick, the character is sideways when he's drop kicking.
Yes.
If he's going to miss the drop kick, he's on his back.
Yes. Yes.
Always.
Always, yes. Well, it's a, you take that bump, you know. Got to do
it. That's right.
Back. Yeah.
Also, but speaking of taking bumps, Christ, this match took so much out of both guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, this may be the hardest hitting SummerSlam main event I've ever seen. And that's most of them.
Yeah, I don't. I have to think about that, but it is a very, very hard hitting match.
I mean, obviously, you go back to maybe Brett and Davey, because that match was so tight.
Yeah, crisp. Yeah,
and really, there aren't that many straight wrestling matches that finish off SummerSlams. SummerSlam is sort of a show where a giant story or a giant gimmick match ends it off.
Mm-hmm.
Like SummerSlam main events are sort of the home of things like cage matches or bullshit finishes or special referees or things of that nature, right?
Yeah, big tag matches, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, big tag matches. Like last year's SummerSlam was, you know, the 7-on-7 thing. That's that sort of thing.
Sure.
But like there's Brett and Davey in 92. There's this match in 04. And I don't know, there are just very few other straight up hard-hitting wrestling matches made of SummerSlams.
Yeah. I guess Angle Austin.
Austin didn't win clean. It didn't finish clean, right? When I think of a pure wrestling match, I feel like the ending has to also be pure.
Right.
Angle Austin is beautiful for its own ways that we already talked about.
Mm.
But it wasn't clean.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So when I think of clean matches with clean endings, I can think of those two, and I don't know. Are there any others?
Let's see. Well, I guess Rock and Lesnar, you could argue.
No, you're right. You could say that Rock and Lesnar are, but I guess I don't consider either of them wrestlers. I consider them sports entertainment guys. To say, considering how Lesnar ended up.
Yeah.
But in WWE, I always looked at him as a sports entertainment guy, not a wrestler, unless he was wrestling Angle.
Okay. Yeah. See, I always thought of Lesnar as not really being a good sports entertainer, but the wrestling part, like when he, like even like against Undertaker, certainly against Angle, no question. But I don't know. I guess I have a different perception, but I haven't really thought that much about it. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, this would definitely be one of those candidates for sure. Another really cool, I think my favorite thing out of this match is when is a little bit right afterward is Benoit is going for the sharpshooter, and then Orton rolls through and then like locks one in on his own. Like, first of all, like, incredible how he was able to do that.
And very impressive.
And there's just this massive, like, it's like a gasp that the audience is expressing, but they actually boo it. But they only boo it for a second.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do a sharpshooter without homaging Bret Hart, and you know he's the prime minister here, so
right.
He doesn't do a very good sharpshooter though. He does like a Rock style sharpshooter.
Yeah.
Like, you remember how the Rock did the sharpshooter where he would just sort of stand there sort of hold the guy's legs?
Yeah, Rock's sharpshooter was not very good.
Right, and that, it sort of reminded me of that one. Whereas Benoit's sharpshooter and Bret's sharpshooter and even like Natalya Neidhart's sharpshooter, they just lean back.
Yes.
And that's what makes a sharpshooter look painful, is the leaning. It's not the fact that he's got his legs crossed.
Right. Although if you at least hold the legs tightly, it looks better than if you, you know, like Rock holds them so loose. It's always been, yes. It's always been a little annoying to me. But
yeah, if you hold them loose, it's like, it's not, you're just holding the guy's legs. It's like barely a Boston Crab.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I still think the best sharpshooter, just to get off topic, that I've ever seen was Natalia's on Eve.
Well, I think it was Melina.
Was it Melina?
Yeah, Melina.
The one who just leans back 180 degrees?
Yeah, that was Melina.
Oh, so.
Yeah, that was awesome. No question.
It's one of those few things where you're like, you know what? I don't think a man can do that move.
No, I don't think so. No. Unless you're like Lanny Poffo or something. Unless you have incredible flexibility. But other than that.
Unless you're Lanny Poffo.
Yeah. I've heard stories, so. So yeah, there's the offense at the end. Benoit tries like a German suplex, and then Orton blocks it, but then Benoit actually like counters it into a Northern Lights suplex, which I thought that was really cool. And Orton, Benoit then tries a superplex, but he gets shoved down, and then Orton's crossbody, like. For all the stuff that people give on Orton, he has a beautiful crossbody block off the top rope, like possibly the best one. Like he almost does like a Rob Van Dam kind of like rotation sort of angles his body kind of thing. But I think it's really cool.
Certainly, I think there's a large argument for the Randy Orton fans to look at this match and say, hey, no, he was good.
Yeah, he certainly could be good. I didn't think of Orton as a particularly bad wrestler at this point. I don't think of him necessarily as a bad wrestler. Now, I think my thing with Orton is that he's a good wrestler, but not usually great. And he lacks a charisma. Like I don't feel like I've ever like felt like a connection to that character at all. That's more my where I'm kind of come from on not being like an Orton guy. Like I don't think Orton's any better than like Tito Santana was in the 80s. And Tito Santana was like a really good wrestler and popular and fun. But I mean, Tito Santana was never somebody you would have considered world champion in the 80s. You know, and I kind of feel like Orton is sort of the equivalent of that today. Only he's been world champion 10 times or whatever. So. But the performance here is very good. There's no doubt about that. Any other like highlights of the match for you in particular?
Oh man, that RKO came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They push the RKO as a thing that can come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But it very rarely does. Mm-hmm. But this time, you A, didn't see it coming. B, didn't think that would be the end of the match. And C, thought, wait a minute, that was the end of the match? It was so surprising that it was disappointing at first.
Yeah.
And then you get over that a little and you realize, no, that's his move. Mm-hmm. And it just so happens that Randy Orton's finishing move takes 1 second.
Right.
Right? And very, very few other guys take that short of time to finish a match. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's such a better version of the Diamond Cutter.
I don't know. I think I like a lot of like the angles that DDP could kind of and the varieties of ways that DDP could take with it. I think DDP's was just as good, honestly.
Maybe it had more variety, but it was never as fast.
Hmm.
Certainly not with like if you in this match, Randy Orton has had some slow, stupid RKOs in his career.
Okay, this one was remarkably fast. I will grant you that. Yes.
And this match goes, what, 22 minutes, 23 minutes?
I think about that, yeah.
And just like that, and it's not like he ever even attempted the move in the match.
He teased one, but yeah, that was the only time.
I feel like that really hinders the RKO as a move, is that he often teases it too much. Mm-hmm. Probably more than like almost any other finisher out there, the RKO gets teased.
Yeah,
just because it's so easy to do the lockup of it, but like it's not a two-step move, so that when they do that lockup, like when he grabs the guy by the head, you know it's not going to actually happen, because when it does happen, that step isn't present.
Yeah,
it's sort of like when, do you remember in like 96? With Stone Cold, and he didn't really have the stunner totally down yet. It was still like a three-step process.
Yeah, it was definitely more awkward. Like, I remember particularly, like, the Mark Marrow King of the Ring match he had, which is a great match, but you can tell when it's like when he's first doing the stunner, and yeah, it's very labored.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you know, 2000, 2001, the stunner took half a second to do.
Yes.
Right? I feel like that's sort of how the RKO is in a tease compared to when he actually does it.
Okay.
You know, and this match is maybe the fastest RKO I've seen. Mm-hmm. And man, it sucked being there live because I didn't want Randy Orton to win.
Yeah.
I was not cheering for him. I was it sucks because I was a full-blown Benoit fan. Mm-hmm. For years. Like, the second I saw him in WCW, I was a Benoit fan. Mm-hmm. Throughout, up until the end.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so hard for me. Is he wasn't just a wrestler on the show that I liked. He was the wrestler I liked on a show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was my favorite wrestler as well. So I didn't watch the show live, but on pay-per-view as it happened. But when I found mm-hmm. out, you know, soon afterward, I was definitely very disappointed in the result.
Did unfortunately get the feeling that not only did he lose the belt, but that his time was over.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, and in fairness, it was a nice, you know, it was a pretty good run that he had.
Yeah, the length of the run was not short or anything.
Yeah, and the matches he was able to, he was focused on pretty well. They kind of really. For a little bit in the summer, they really heavily focused on Michaels and Triple H over Benoit's feud, which I think was with Kane. But he had plenty of opportunity to have great matches. He was featured in the show. I mean, it wasn't like a Rey Mysterio thing where as soon as Rey won it, they just did everything they could to make Rey look bad as champion kind of thing. You know,
I agree. The run itself was admirable, in their respect for it.
Sure.
But I felt the second he lost it, he was not going to get it again.
Right. Yeah, I felt the same way. So.
Right. Whereas, you know, you typically think of a WWE guy at the top sort of trading the belt.
Right.
Right. He gets it, he loses it, he gets it. You know, that's why Randy Orton's a 10-time champion, right?
Right.
Randy Orton has never had a run like Benoit had there.
Mm.
But he's had it a ton. So I don't know which one is worth more.
Yeah, it depends. I guess.
But I think that's what was heartbreaking about it. Not that he lost, because God knows it was a great match, and there was nothing to be ashamed of about the run or about the match itself. But just you did get this sense the day after that they were no longer drinking the Benoit Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely moved on, and he was still a major character for the next few years, but he was never the focus again.
Yeah.
And, you know, and him being one of my very favorites, probably along with Jericho and Eddie Guerrero, I think they were sort of my three favorites in the early 2000s. But Benoit definitely and Guerrero had too, frankly. They both had kind of had their runs, and then they were kind of moving on, and it was kind of a sad thing. It was like the WrestleMania 20, you know, with Benoit and Guerrero both celebrating with the championship was very much like it felt like a new era kind of thing, you know, to me. That was at least my hope. Like, okay, now we're going to have, you know, these great wrestlers, and they're going to get their time and their focus, and they're going to have long reigns and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, what they had was good, but I don't think anything they could have done would have, like, I guess, met my hopes at the time.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, as a wrestling fan, I have unreasonable expectations.
We all do.
Yes. Yes. We do share that virtue.
At least we admit it.
We do. Yeah, we do.
Don't come around here every week and say, oh, well, why didn't they do this? This is what I wanted. And then the next week when they do what we wanted, we say, oh, why didn't they do this? This is what we wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're at least self-aware of our unreasonable expectations for things. So that's good,
yeah,
for,
sure.
Good for us.
What else can you do?
Yeah, another thing I want to mention is really cool sequence where Benoit hits three German suplexes, then Orton sort of blocks the fourth one and then tries a clothesline, but Benoit ducks, and then Benoit hits three more. So that was kind of cool. And then Benoit goes to the top and then tries diving headbutt, but then he runs into Orton's feet, really, really hard into his feet. Probably one of the two or three best spots I've ever seen with a guy coming off the top rope and hitting somebody's feet. Like, usually that that always looks awkward and silly.
It was very, very, just very good chain wrestling there.
Yeah. But very much like you were sort of talking about, like, everything looks like it hurt. That looked like it hurt.
Yeah. The whole thing looked like it hurt. It was hard to watch.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not, like, at this point in time, it's not like I've looked at this match and I could go, oh, well, now I can go look at other Chris Benoit matches. Okay. This match, if anything, made me continue not watching Chris Benoit matches.
You not wanting to continue watching Benoit matches, yeah.
In a sense. Like, I look at this and I go, well, shit.
Yeah, it's been about a year or more since I started watching Benoit again, and it has gotten easier for me. Like, there are certain things that it happened where the things are certainly in the back of my mind, but I find I can separate it and compartmentalize it somewhat. I don't know. And obviously everyone is different in how they can deal with that, but for me, it really isn't quite. It's certainly not as raw as it once was, you know. I can just sort of – I can enjoy it for the most part. But there are – you know, like I was talking about, especially on that dive, there are those moments it's like, wow. You know, it's like what you know, incredible, you know, violence he did to himself, you know, throughout his wrestling career and how, you know, obviously the effect that had on how his life ended and taking two other lives, you know. We should talk about the – we should talk about after the match, though.
The handshake.
Yeah.
That was a good handshake.
I think that was a really kind of a cool moment. You know, we have, you know, Orton gets the RKO, wins. There's a big reaction to the finish. He's doing a pretty straight up, like, I'm a happy guy celebration. He's sort of like a good guy expressions on his face. Like, Evolution does not come out at all. No one comes out with him, which, you know, would have seemed bizarre.
Seemed weird, right?
Yeah. Right.
Made sense the next day, but seems weird by itself.
Right, right. And then they had played up, I mean, they'd already played up a little bit of the Orton, you know, kind of being ahead of Triple H in the pecking order in the sense of getting the shot. So they were already kind of playing that a little bit. They may have slightly teased the dissension. I can't remember exactly the pacing of that angle, but, well,
I think what it was is that Triple H didn't think Orton had a shot.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
He was.
I think Orton. I think Triple H was dismissive of the idea, like giving Orton the shot was a waste of a shot.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. That's a pretty good story. Let's finish talking about this. Then Benoit kind of staggers out of the ring. He's obviously got a pained expression on his face, and then there's probably like a minute or two. You know, he's. Between like the finish, Benoit going out and then deciding to kind of go back in the ring, and then he stands up and he faces Orton, and he screams, sort of puts his hand out, and Orton is reluctant, but then Benoit screams, be a man, repeatedly, and then finally Orton shakes his hand, and then he definitely, which actually there's mostly boos for the handshake, which was a little weird, but
we're Canadian, right? Yeah. We do not appreciate good sportsmanship.
No, Yeah, you guys like hockey, so I guess, you know, people.
Well, not in a wrestling match, anyway.
Yeah, but yeah, that's fair. And then kind of this point, like Orton has some tears and is crying and celebrating, and it's clearly, you know, his good guy moment. So.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to talk a little bit about the next night, because I think that's, and maybe, you know, just sort of how that the Orton as a good guy thing played out, because I think that's an interesting time. I don't know how much of that you remember off the top of your head.
I do. I remember the next night pretty clearly.
Okay.
I wasn't live there for it, but I think it was just in Toronto again.
Mm-hmm.
Match itself, because Benoit gets a rematch.
Yeah.
And I actually enjoyed watching the Monday Night Raw match between Benoit and Orton more than the SummerSlam match. But that's at the time. I don't know if I would say that now.
Right.
I feel like the Raw match was far more Benoit on the frustrated aggressive.
Okay.
And Benoit just laces into Orton. Basically, it's I think it's like a 10-12 minute just straight beatdown on Orton, isn't it? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I need to watch the match again because I don't remember the details of it offhand.
But I don't think Orton got a lot of offense. Mm-hmm. And I honestly can't tell you how the match ended, if it was clean or if Evolution came in.
I think it was basically clean. They may have been out there. There may have been a bit of a distraction, and then Orton gets the RKO out of nowhere, basically. But it was definitely, you know, it wasn't a dirty win. That's for sure. I mean, it was a basically just a, you know, Orton won the match mostly on his merits. So
okay, and then what happens is that Evolution comes, actually kick Benoit out, and then you never see him again, right?
They come out for after the match. Evolution comes out for a mock celebration, and then Batista puts Orton on his shoulders, and then Triple H does first does a thumbs up and then switches it to the thumbs down, and they do the electric chair and basically beat up Orton and bloody him and say that he's nothing without him. And then after that, Triple H wants Orton to give up the title, and then Orton refuses and spits in his face, and then they set up the match at Unforgiven, which weirdly Triple H wins. So I don't know. I think my thing with that is they basically like took 6 months of storytelling and compressed it into 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And I think that really hurt the momentum that Orton had. And which is just, and it was kind of a strange decision at the time, because there's so much mileage you could have gotten out of, you know, of, yeah, now Orton's the guy in Evolution, and, you know, Triple H is obviously, you know, just sort of jealous, and you can see him scheming and all of that. And, you know, there was just so much you could have gotten out of that. The angle was good, but it was just so out of nowhere. And then they clearly just didn't really have like a good. I mean, the idea was to get it back to Triple H and then have Orton chase Triple H, but that dynamic just didn't work. And also,
I agree.
Orton had his limitations. You know, like I've talked about before, sort of as his personality. You know, his promos are just sort of there. They've never been particularly dynamic.
I'm generally not one to fan book, but I feel like that whole thing would have been a lot better if Orton and Benoit had sort of a thing together.
Like if they had been partners, or they had, you know, or they had
sort
of
become sort of allegiance, in a sense that, you know, Orton gained Benoit's respect by match. And now that Orton's being sort of destroyed by his former friends, that Benoit could have helped in that regard.
Yeah.
And then that would have led to some sort of big tag match or Survivor Series kind of thing. That seems more like the kind of thing that they would do if they had equal faith in everyone. But two things happened there. I think they lost faith in Benoit for whatever reason. And they just felt like putting it back on Triple H would set things back to a sense of normality.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would do whatever they would do. But yeah, from SummerSlam 2004 to WrestleMania, I felt like they told a really kind of boring, lame story with Evolution.
Okay, so you're not a fan of the Batista.
Well, like I said, up until WrestleMania, at least then they had something different. But the Orton Triple H story really flopped, and I think it's because Orton was a good guy, but he was not a sympathetic good guy.
Yeah. He needed time to develop into a sympathetic good guy. I think he turned too soon also. Like, I think that character needed more development.
Exactly. At no point in time was I worried about Orton.
Right.
Right? Like, they played him off as this character that needed help.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that didn't aid the story at all, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, and they were lucky because they had the Batista thing in their back pocket, and they did basically the story with Batista that they could have done with Orton, and it really worked very well for Batista. So, I mean, everything worked out fine in the end, and you know, Orton's obviously, done well, so it's not like they killed a character who could have really been great for them, but it was sort of a bizarre thing at the time, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And they fixed Orton by making him a bad guy as soon as they...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, he needed to be a bad guy because he just wasn't a very good guy, and he was a much better bad guy. And he's fine as a good guy now. I mean, not that he's my favorite or anything, but he's
right. But you would agree that his strength as a good guy now is not based on sympathy.
No,
right?
Yeah, it's sort of based on him being I guess sort of tough and merciless and. I don't know. I'm not really sure exactly what the appeal is, but I get that he has a tremendous appeal with people. So I'm not exactly sure where that stems from, but it clearly works. So
he's very handsome.
He is a handsome guy. There, you know, he has tattoos. He likes to slither. So people like that. He's been around long enough. People tend to like people who have been around long enough unless they get really dull, like if they're like an X-Pac thing or something, if they're like really, if there's a perception they're lazy or like coasting, then people kind of get bored with them. But Orton hasn't had that problem, so.
Hmm.
I don't know. I'm just, that's off the top of my head. That might not be right, but we'll go with it.
Good match.
Yeah, good match. Any other memories to share of that event?
Yeah, I remember kind of being far more excited for Guerrero and Angle.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you know, it was really good.
Oh, wait a minute. I thought that was Lesnar Angle.
No.
In 2004? Let me see.
No. No, that was Guerrero and Angle. It's a rematch from WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah,
weird.
Very good.
Okay. Oh,
You're thinking SummerSlam 03.
I am. Oh, yeah. Lesnar was gone. Duh. All right. Yeah. You're right. That's what I was thinking. Okay. Yeah. And then JBL was champion. He wrestled Undertaker. Okay. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. That was the worst.
Yeah.
It was awful, that one.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah. Ric Flair or Triple H and Eugene also was at that show.
For history, that one.
Yes. Yes.
One for the ages.
It was, yeah. So.
Yeah, it was a half and half show. Like, half of it was pretty good. Like, the Edge match was good. Guerrero and Angle was really good. Benoit and Orton was really good. There was a tag match I remember being, you know, pretty decent. But there were some serious misses, too. Yeah.
There was a six-man, the Dudleys, against Mysterio, Kidman, and Paul London.
That's the one. That one was pretty. That one was pretty decent.
Okay, I can see that being fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks again for talking about this show with me, and thanks everyone for listening. And we'll be back again with more SummerSlam reviews up until the day of the show. So keep checking them out, and yeah, thanks again.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flair Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlair.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flair Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flair Quarterly today at fairtoflair.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.